I'm sorry that I'm going to bring it back to football while you're crying, but maybe this will make you feel better.
It makes me want to not be friends with you when you do that, and now you're doing it while I'm crying. That's harsh.
But I apologize, and I hope that you can forgive me.
I forgive you, and you should forgive yourself.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we ask, is self-forgiveness really possible? Bean, are you ready to forgive yourself?
I hope I am.
What up, Bean?
What up, gangsta? It's so good to see your face.
Thanks.
Makes my day.
It's nice to be seen. What's happening over there? How are you? I said I wasn't going to ask you how you are on record days until we hit record. So okay, give me the real tea.
Okay, fine. I'm going to come out of the gate real dark. You ready?
Oh, okay. Oh,
is that bad?
No, go.
I was about to get in the shower and I got in the shower and then I noticed my phone was ringing and it was my daughter who texts me all the days from high school, but she was calling on the phone. So I got out of the shower wet to answer the phone because my first fucking thought, sorry, excuse my lang, was school shooting. And I just want to say out loud, we need better gun control. The end. That shouldn't be. I don't want that to be where my mind goes. And do you want to know what she wanted to tell me? On Fridays, they have ice cream. They have ice cream in the cafeteria. So she's going to eat that instead of the chocolate cake I packed her. I'm like, cool.
Thanks, honey. Thanks. Raina does this to me all the time. She calls me in the middle of the day. And of course, I'm like, okay, this is it. This is where I've got to like get ready, get in the car, go fucking save my daughter. And she's like, Mom, I just kind of say like, I'm going to go to Berries and Bowls today. And I was wondering if I can use the credit card. Like, can you text me that?
I really like that you also have the same paranoia because it makes me feel like I'm not crazy. But also I don't like it because that's fucked up that that's how we have to think.
You're not crazy. Fuck this situation in this world we live in right now and this country where, not fuck this country, but fuck the reality that we have some of the highest school shooting rates. I mean, it's just not, it's not acceptable for our children. We deserve better.
Yes. Yeah. So that's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm good. Am I good?
Don't ask me. I'm asking you.
You called and you said, how are you, Bean?
Yeah.
I'm good. Yeah.
That feels good.
TJ's out of town and it is a little difficult when he's out of town, which is like hard for me to say out loud as a former single mom who was really proud of like how independent I was and how I had it all together.
Yeah, but why can't
it's
depend?
It's hard when he's out of town. I got to say a lot.
But why can't that be a beautiful thing? Like, oh, wow, it's he offers beautiful. This level of support in our relationship. So when he's not here, it's harder. How great.
It is a beautiful thing. And I miss him. But otherwise, I'm great. Oh, my Keon and I are going to go to Omakase tonight because it's a delayed, my very, very delayed birthday gift.
Yummy.
And it's really amazing experience here where like it's only 10 seats at the like sushi bar and they bring you 9 different courses. And I just feel so grateful that my 15-year-old son is excited to go spend 2.5 hours dining with me.
Like 100%
quality time. So I'm excited for that.
And quality food nonetheless. I mean, enhance the experience much?
Totally. Fancy little boy. All right. Well, are you ready for hot or hype?
Oh, I'm hot for it. Hot.
This is where we talk about a trend in wellness or self-help and we rate it hot or hype. And today we're going to talk about sober curious.
Oh.
Bean, have you heard that term?
I sure have. And I am curious.
About being sober curious?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So sober curious is basically just about like choosing to question your relationship with alcohol and just starting to experiment with either reducing it or eliminating it. And actually it's, you know, I think that the newest part of this, because there's been sobriety for so long and AA has been around forever, is that maybe this isn't so much about addiction, but it's a choice that comes from wanting to be just healthier or more mindful. And it's showing up everywhere right now. Do you have friends that are sober curious?
I hate to admit it, but no.
None.
None. Zero. You? I feel like in California, I'm not hanging around with the best crowds.
California is a very surprisingly sober place. I mean, not very sober, but more sober than Maryland was.
Not surprising at all.
Well, because it's a wellness minded.
Right.
So you don't have sober curious people in your life. I do know that what you say to me often when I'm like, oh, I shouldn't drink right now when we're together is, Bean, are you about to go sober? And it's said with a little bit of, there's an accusatory anxiety.
All right. Well, I'll save my response to that comment for my response to sober curious.
Okay. All right. So the cases for it. You know, obviously alcohol is known to have negative effects on people. So one of the first cases is just mental and physical health. People report better sleep, improved mood, sharper focus when they eliminate alcohol from their lives. The other really interesting thing, though, is the social shift. Younger generations are just drinking less and they're preferring alternatives like mocktails or adaptogen drinks or cannabis. And I do think that there is something to the rise of the legality of cannabis and the ability to put alcohol aside. But I thought it was interesting. Only 54% of U.S. adults today say they consume alcohol as of 2025, which is a noticeable decline from 70% in past decades.
Wow.
Nearly 40% of U.S. respondents in a survey about sober curious said they closely or occasionally follow a sober curious lifestyle. 40%.
Wow.
That's a lot of people, right?
Wow. So yeah, a lot.
It is a growing trend. And then the cultural acceptance for it has, I think, facilitated it. Bars and restaurants now have non-alcoholic menus. I've noticed that everywhere I go, there's always a mocktail list that didn't used to exist 15 years ago. And then you see a booming industry of non-alcoholic brands like Seed Lip. Athletic Brewing is one that TJ drinks a lot. And it's really linked to, you know, what we talk about here a lot, which is self-help, mindfulness, self-trust, intentional living. And it's seen as facilitating that. So that is the case for it. I'm going to give you the criticism and the pushback, and you're going to tell me hot or hype.
Okay.
The first thing is just the privilege factor. Not everyone can afford a $12 non-alcoholic boutique adaptogen drink. Fine. Those people can drink Coca-Cola like my brother loves to do. The terminology, you know, people who are addiction recovery advocates say that sober curious waters down the seriousness of sobriety and recovery. It's like some people are fighting for their lives and have chosen sobriety as to survive. And that sober curious sort of feels like a privileged words, little like, you know, flirtation with something that is so serious to so many people. The social pressure of it, you know, virtue signaling is a big part of our society, meaning I'm a vegan, you know, so somehow that makes me better than you because I'm not killing or eating animals. The same feeling is attributed to people who talk about being sober curious. I'm healthier than you because I don't drink, or I was able to do this and you weren't. Critics are questioning, like, is this a temporary trend? Is this just a wellness fad? Instead of being an actual sustainable change that people are making to move away from something that's bad for them. So listen, the movement is creating space for more choices, but is it adding a new kind of pressure? I don't know. Bean, sober curious, hot or hype?
Per usual, my answer is not going to be simple. I think even as I'm getting older, I'm realizing the truly negative impact that alcohol is having on my body. And drinking multiple days in a row in your 40s is not like drinking multiple days in a row in your 20s, which just makes it that more obvious to me of how detrimental alcohol can be. However, my issue with Sober Curious is simply the name. Just like the critics say, I think it's taking a extremely challenging, a lifelong challenge for many people and kind of making it easy breezy. So I'm going to say my answer is going to be I'm hot for the concept, but the name is hype for me. Like, let's reframe it to like, I don't mind if you're going for it. I'm all about it. I mean, I'm not doing it, but I'm all about it. I do try to limit how much alcohol I take in. I think it's better for you. I think it's better for my mind. I think marijuana has less of an impact on my thinking, even though that's probably wrong.
Your memory, maybe not.
I've never had a good memory. So don't blame the weed. Leave the weed out of this.
Add the weed to it and you've got Dory.
Leave the weed out of this.
Okay, so you're going hot.
I'm going hot for any wellness that can like is obviously better for you. It's obviously better to abstain from alcohol, obviously. And I'm not going to lie, mocktails don't do it for me. I have a cocktail because I want to get tipsy. I'm not having a cocktail because the taste is fun, but I'm doing it for the alcohol, bruh.
Duh.
But more power to you if the mocktail works. It makes you feel better in a social setting. God bless.
Totally. Andrew Huberman, who is studied wellness and talks about wellness a lot, says that you are supposed to limit yourself to 2 alcoholic drinks a week. And I have to say, that's really challenging. Not that I have like 15, but 2
calm down.
Is a lot.
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah.
That sounds like what I would aim to do. Yes.
Okay. But how far are you from that? Like if that is California, what state are you in?
I don't know. Don't ask Pennsylvania. That question. I'm straight up in PA. I did back off. Actually, I will say as my marijuana usage increased, my alcohol usage decreased.
That's why I think that they are very linked to the fact that marijuana usage is legal. So I'm going to go hot because I do think that it's helping people to feel better. I do think that it also even is something that can, you know what I think? I think that sobriety and AA may have had a heaviness factor or reputation to it that people wanted to not see themselves as associated to. I'm not an addict. I don't want to see myself that way, right? But like if something like this is a trend, then maybe there's an easier runway for you if you're worried that you're addicted to try putting it aside without having to label yourself as an alcoholic. So I am going to go hot, hot, hot. And if companies are making money off of it, welcome to capitalism. That's hot too. I don't think that's...
Ouch. Oof. All right.
I mean, that's the world.
That was a depressing ending to your like, if you want to take a stab at being healthier, great. And fuck capitalism.
Is that it's like a marketing scheme for non-alcoholic companies to make money. And I'm like, fine. People make money off of far worse things.
Agreed. I don't care about that.
Help people be healthy. So I think we're going double hot. She's got a little bit of hype in there about the term. But
a little hype. Can we just change it to like wellness curious or something? Like, come on. Leave the...
Okay. Start the trend, Bean. Follow Melissa on Instagram.
Hashtag don't follow me. Curious. Don't follow me for your wellness curious tips, please.
All right. Well, speaking of
wellness,
I don't know how to make this transition.
Wellness. Yeah.
Mental wellness.
Yep.
Today, our main topic is self-forgiveness. I called Bean this week and I said, Bean, I want to talk about self-forgiveness. I think because I was in quite a reflective place over the last few days about myself and about ways that I may or may not have shown up for other people, which I'll talk about later. And then I wondered, okay, well, if I'm in this place, I wonder how many people really struggle with genuinely forgiving themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that what's most important is that we really explore the hidden weight of self-blame. Because if you flip the coin, the opposite of self-forgiveness is living in a place of self-blame.
What does it look like when somebody is living in self-blame?
I think a lot of us, I think more of us live in self-blame than we even know. But I would say it is the simple habit of always thinking this is happening because it's my fault. I did something to cause this person to not text me back, or I did something to cause this person to just be in a mood when I walk in a room and I can feel that they're not happy. You and I were just on a Zoom with a bunch of people and we were saying like one person's energy was really low. I think that when you're in this habit of self-blame, it would be easy, you know, to come out of that call and be like, they weren't excited to be there because of me or that I've done something wrong here. I think that's what it looks like. I think when you've actually done something in life that you need to forgive yourself for, what it looks like is not getting past the pointing fingers at yourself and being hard on yourself part. What it looks like is not having grace or compassion for yourself. I think something that's so interesting when I think about self-forgiveness is why is it so much easier for me to forgive other people?
I was just going to ask that question. That was literally going to be my question, because the core of this episode for me is figuring that out, is that I am super pro forgiveness. I'm all about, I'm not into like holding on to things. I'm all about talking about it and moving through it. And for the most part, I'm very big into forgiveness. I think it's healing for both parties.
Yeah, you're very forgiving.
I'm very forgiving because I don't believe in holding on to, you can forgive and still create distance. You can forgive and it doesn't have to look the same, but you can still forgive and move forward. But for me personally, I don't struggle with blaming myself for lots of things. Like I don't go into a room that often and someone's in a mood and I'm like, oh shit, did I upset them? Yeah. Like, I'm just like, oh, they're having a day. Like I can tell they're having a day. But when I do get into a place where I am blaming myself, I go hard and I go deep. That's what she said. And I cannot pull myself out of it. But for others, I like really approach situations with tremendous compassion and understanding, but I cannot do it for myself when I feel that way.
And the core truth in that is I have more compassion for other people than I have for myself. That's the reality when we can forgive other people more easily. So, you know, I think that as with all things, this comes back to, why is it so hard for me to give myself loving compassion and grace?
Yes.
What is it that I believe about myself that tells me I don't deserve that? Or what part of my survival strategy is trying to protect me by making me feel that I am in the wrong or that I am bad? Think about that. If there's a part of you that feels that way, might it be about being able to control your environment and being able to control what's happening? Because the only thing that you can control is yourself.
Correct. Right?
So if that's true, is part of our protective mechanism that makes it hard to forgive ourselves in there, because it's saying, if you're just perfect, if you don't mess up, and if I keep reminding you of all the ways you did mess up in the past, you won't mess up again. And then we'll be in a position where we'll get love from other people, or we will get acceptance. Does that make sense what I'm saying? It's like a strategy of getting love by feeling like I'm going to control my behavior with so much shame and guilt that I will make sure I show up as the very best, most perfect person that will be so hard not to love.
I think that makes sense for me, for people who are chronically self-blaming. That is when it's almost a habit that they can't break, but it makes less sense to me for people who only sometimes struggle with self-forgiveness. Like, how do you tease apart why I can forgive myself for one thing and I can't forgive myself for something else?
I think what I'm saying is that protection strategy is what causes self-blame. How often you use it is based on your life experience or your limiting beliefs or your conditioning, your nature and your nurture. But that the core of self-blame comes from a need to protect oneself by believing that if you can control your behavior in a way that makes you unassailable, which is just not fair because we're humans and we make mistakes and we are always going to be misunderstood. We're going to misspeak. We're going to react from a non-centered place. Like, it's impossible, this illusion that you can control your behavior so much that you're never going to offend or hurt somebody. But that part of you is trying to convince you that if you're perfect, you'll be lovable. I do think that's the core reason, regardless of how chronically you utilize self-blame in your life.
Now that you say that, I'm realizing for my own life, the level of self-forgiveness is directly correlated to how deep of an issue it actually is. Like if I say something wrong or whatever, I'm like, I'm sorry. I take accountability and then I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I don't care anymore. But if it's something really deep, which I guess could really be a great transition for us to share some of our own struggles with self-forgiveness, it becomes, for me, like nearly impossible. And I am praying that I come out of this episode with tools to understand how to apply that level of ease of forgiveness when I'm in a deeper point of pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I am really curious what thing you're struggling to forgive yourself. And I'm your best friend. And I feel like right now, if you had to ask me, I wonder what I would say. I wonder if I know. What is something that you're really struggling to forgive yourself with right now?
It's right now. I have to say, I really feel like I cry every time I talk.
I think that's part of why people listen. I think that it's a drinking game.
Okay. Unless you're sober curious, then it's a mocktail drinking game. Right. or hit that weed, hit that pen. I have said it 1,000 fucking times. I am in the greatest period of self-awakening that I have ever experienced in my 43 years on this earth. And I have awakened to things that are beautiful and powerful. And I have awakened to things that have been quietly haunting me for a very long time that I paid no mind to. And it's one of those things that once you open it and you look at it, there's no unseeing it. I can't even like attempt to shove anything that I have become aware of away. And it actually spreads across a lot of areas. It actually honestly spreads across like every single area of my life. And normally, in a lot of ways for myself, I am very compassionate and I do love myself and I am a confident person. But the unboxing of all of this, I think it's just been so potent and powerful that understanding my role and understanding how a lot of these discoveries have filtered throughout so many areas of my life have resulted in a lot of self-blame. Like feeling like if I had either become aware earlier or if I hadn't been so naive to certain things earlier or if I hadn't claimed that they weren't as significant as they were, which was just a coping mechanism, I wouldn't be struggling in the way that I am now. I would have had a longer runway to do. Like one smaller example is like career. Like I was like, no, I don't, that's fine. I don't need it. And then suddenly I woke up and I was 41 at the time and was like, shit, I don't have any skills to offer this world. And then I started in on this, like, why didn't you do it 5 years? Why weren't you paying attention to this? Instead of being like, you made an active choice to be home with your children and that was really what you wanted to do. I am like, I cannot stop like belittling myself and thinking, what, how could you have, why didn't you do this differently? Not even how could you have, like, why didn't you have the wherewithal to do all of these things differently? Or why didn't you have the wherewithal to realize how certain things were affecting your life earlier? And then you could have operated from like a totally different mindset. Mm. And I have no one to blame but myself. Nobody.
You're naming something so important. You're naming something so, I think, relatable to so many people, which is when you experience enlightenment. And by enlightenment, I just mean a new level of awareness about your needs, about your desires, about your boundaries or lack thereof. When you experience that enlightenment, it's so easy to use that enlightenment as a stick to beat up your past self with.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm going to bring it back to football while you're crying, but maybe this will make you feel better.
It makes me want to not be friends with you when you do that. And now you're doing it while I'm crying. That's harsh. Right. That's extra harsh.
But I apologize. And I hope that
you're fine. I forgive you. And you should forgive yourself.
If you've heard this term Monday morning quarterback, it just comes from this idea that, you know, games are played on Sunday. I'm just going to explain it to you. And it's going to make sense. Just
I was like, I don't know what that means. Okay.
I'm not going to talk about the Ravens or anything. It just means, you know, the game is on Sunday. You did on Sunday what you could have done with the information in front of you on Sunday. Then a whole bunch of experiences happened during the game and you learned a lot about the game and yourself, it's so easy on Monday to call a different play and say, I should have passed it instead of, you know, throwing it. My point is, this
Your notion point is a non-athletic version of hindsight is 2020. I'll just say that.
You.
You're welcome. Right. Leave the football out of it.
My point is that I think that it's really important that we understand that we do this to ourselves as we grow, is that we use our more expanded consciousness as a weapon against our less expanded consciousness. And yeah. I think that part of compassion, like when I'm listening to you, and by the way, I'm trying to do two things at once, which is,
this compassion
I feel towards Bean right now is what I want to say is like, how dare you be so mean to the version of my best friend who was doing the best she could do with the information she had in front of her in the moment? Because now you have more information. That's so unfair. So I'm navigating that while being aware, oh, but you do that to yourself. So like how easy it is for me to see you feel this way and have this welling up of compassion that's like, no, hell no, that's not fair. But then it's so hard when I'm being hard on myself to do that same kind of advocacy that says like, whoa, don't blame 32-year-old Maury. 32-year-old Maury had a whole different set of data in front of her than 45-year-old Maury does. And it's just so deeply unfair that we do that.
And honestly, it's even like, that's true too, but even yesterday's Maury has such a different set of data in front of her than today's Maury does. It's like every day we're being fed these pieces of information that inform our mentality.
Yeah. I think that's the reframe for you though. And I think for anyone that relates to this, this wishing that you had done better when you didn't have the information you have today is just to remember, I did what I could with the tools I had in front of me. There is no way I would have had a different consciousness without the experiences that led me to this expanded consciousness. So it's just really unfair. I do think the thing I'm struggling with right now came about because of a very specific incident that happened. I found out over the weekend that a colleague of mine that I hired when I was at the agency, who I adored and we just had a deep connection with, is at the end of their battle with cancer. I found out because another colleague who understood the way I felt about this person reached out and was like, I just want to make sure you know this. And, you know, first of all, after just being devastated, you know, the first thought was like, how the fuck did you not know this? What happened to this connection that you valued so much that you're finding out secondhand way late, way too late to show up and be a support system? We stopped really being connected when I left that agency, and there was other reasons for it. I think, you know, yeah, I won't get into it, but we didn't stay in connection. I think the thing I'm having a hard time forgiving myself for is, why would you give up on people so easily? What is it about you that allows you to move on from the people that you feel so connected to so easily? Like, is there a trait within you that you need to look at and explore to make sure that like you value and you hold on to people? And that they always know how loved they are by you, especially in an instance where you might not get the chance to tell them. And I reached out to this person and I sent a message just letting them know. And I got a very cool, you know, distanced, boundaried response in return. And by the way, they're navigating the end of their life. So absolutely no judgment at all. But of course, my reaction was like, yeah, like you reap what you sow. Of course, you're going to get this at this stage. And so I am still in the process of processing it. I do think for me, self-forgiveness comes once I can identify what I want, what I can be accountable for. That's smart. That's the growth edge in it for me. Yeah. And I am a being that is constantly trying to evolve. Like, there was initially, I'll be honest, a really defensive part of me that wanted to, like, tell this person all the ways they misunderstood and why didn't you try and why didn't you fight? And you know what I mean? There was, like, that fighter in me. And I think that part of my journey with self-forgiveness is, like, also giving her, the one that's defensive, some space to just feel that way. Like, I didn't shame her. I was like, okay, you're right now feeling really hurt. And so you're responding from hurt. I didn't let her do it externally, but I was witness to it internally. I gave her the space, that part of me, to be, you know, stomping her feet about it internally.
Yeah.
And then once I got past that, my natural inclination has become, as I get older, what is in this for you to be aware of? What do you want to become accountable for in this when it comes to the way you navigate relationships? And what can you learn from it? And there's something about that that is so generative or productive that it's taking me out of the self-blame and is facilitating the self-forgiveness.
I think that was the unlock. I think you just gave it out. I think you have always said, you say it in so many situations, and this one is no different, is that you, what I'm hearing is you approached it with curiosity. You said, why did this happen? How did this happen? What's going on here? And if I could have take that and apply it to my situation, it would be like, why do you think you didn't notice these things earlier? Not how dare you not notice these things earlier? Like, what was happening in your world, or what was happening with these other folks, or whatever it is, that allowed you to not be awake to it, rather than like, how dare you not be awake to it? Why weren't you awake? And once maybe I can understand that process a little bit more, it will be easier to have compassion and softness for myself. And you as well, I think it already worked for you. You said, okay, what's going on here with me? Like, why is this happening? Why am I feeling this way? How did this situation get to this place in a very non-judgmental way? And in along that journey, you were able to kind of like move through the situation rather than blame yourself.
Bravo, yeah, and Maury. Self-blame Bravo. Makes it almost impossible to approach yourself with that kind of curiosity. Because when you're in that, it's a very violent internal experience, right? It's a very negative experience. You're bad. Yes. You're a mistake. Not I made a mistake. I am the mistake. You know, that is really violent to your internal system, to all of those young parts of you. So when you're approaching yourself with that kind of violence, of course, there's going to be a fight or flight, which is a defensive self that steps up to go, this is why I did it. And this is what they should know. And this is what... So I think that it's really impossible when you're in self-blame to even be curious. But then the irony of it is the curiosity is what heals the self-blame. So I think you said it really well. I think if you all are relating to this, you know, take a minute right now. What's something in your life you need to forgive yourself for? And then can you commit to maybe the next few days just starting to be curious? Well, why did I do that? Or why didn't I do it? And what about myself is shifting, or do I want to change so that I can show up better for other people and myself? Try that curiosity, because I think what we're saying is curiosity leads to self-compassion.
Yeah.
And that self-compassion is what is going to allow you to.
And I disagree with you. I don't think curiosity is so hard. I think it's actually harder to try to navigate out, get away from this self-blame without curiosity. Curiosity is easy. It's just asking questions to yourself.
Yeah.
And then you can take it for what it is after that. But you just ask some questions like, oh, why didn't I think earlier? Like, oh, I should probably keep my foot in the fucking door. I keep focusing on what could have been. Had I done this, what could have been, rather than why did I do this?
Yes. A lot of good reasons. And I hope that you go at yourself with curiosity when we hang up today. And I really want to know what happens when you start to ask that part of yourself, why did you do it? With no judgment, I want to hear the answer. Why did you choose this at the time?
it's like freeing almost. It's like an understanding. The same reason you'd ask your kid if they did something bad, like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Rather than just punish, you say, what made you do that?
Assuming the worst possible.
Assuming the worst, right.
Yeah.
And often it's something you wouldn't expect anyway.
Right.
And then it's easier to forgive your child.
Exactly. I mean, that's another quick reframe before we end this topic is, you know, think about a child, someone that you feel is vulnerable or that you really care about. How would you talk to them if they were in that same experience? And then just try talking to yourself that way. Just try it and see if there's anything that softens inside you. Just try it.
I love it.
I hope that something in you, if you're listening, the part of you that's ready to forgive yourself just sparked and gave you some kind of signal, a feeling in your
watching,
body. I know she's full of rash
hives. If you're watching on YouTube, I have hives everywhere because that some part of me just was like, oh.
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Oh.
All right. Well, before we leave you, we want to get to our last segment, which is that we always like to answer a listener question. And by the way, we really would love for you to stay in contact with us and send us your listener questions. You can email us at maureeandmelissa@gmail.com. We'll link that in the show notes, but please send us an email, even if you just want to say hi. But if you have a question you want the beans to answer, we are here for you. Today's question is this, and Bean, sorry to say, this is not an easy one.
All right.
We got this. As a mom of three tween and teenage boys, how do I talk to them about the divisiveness they're seeing play out everywhere, but especially on social media?
Oh, Jesus.
I'm worried they are starting to feel like they have to choose sides. Woof. My friend, we're right here in this bus with you. I don't know who's driving the bus, but we're going to attempt to guide it. For now, Bean, what are your thoughts?
My first thought goes to, and I don't know if this is truly answering it, but it's just something to think about, is that I was put off by the idea of choosing sides. And I feel like I would tell them, rather than choosing sides, to listen to themselves, which will probably get you closer to your side and to truly listen to what they feel is right. I mean, I work for an intuitive guide, so I definitely encourage my children to listen to their intuition a lot. But to really make sure that they're coming from a place that feels really aligned with who they are and not aligned with who I am. I am very vocal about my political stance in my home, which I probably should pull back on. But I do encourage them to think like, how does this make you feel for a second? How is this settling in your body? What did that, when you first heard that, what was your reaction? And encourage them to go to their side, not choosing a side, going to where they feel whole.
Side. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, choose your own side. You?
I think it's I'm so happy you said this because this is how we teach self-trust.
Right.
Is by teaching our children, just stop. Yeah. Just take a minute. What do you feel in your body? What do you feel in your emotions? What do you know? What do you sense? That's so brilliant. I would just add, it's real. It is very much going to be a part of our new norm. We're seeing obviously a huge rise in political violence as a result of this divisiveness. We have a president who plays on divisiveness. You know, I want us all to remember our kids are growing up in a very different time than we did. Politics looked different, even if it didn't serve all the people, which it didn't. There was a decorum, there was a like respect amongst people that has just gone out the window. So they're watching adults behave in this really horrendous way of blaming one another and pointing out differences rather than pointing out commonalities. So my work has really been in that, is to remind them of where we're the same and remind them of where to look for humanity in other people. And like, you know, I do think that sports is an example of like where lots of people come together.
It's true.
Regardless of their views, from a same place of passion or excitement. So, you know, hobbies, sports, comedy, like there are unifying things out there. And I think the more we can ourselves show our kids that we are finding commonality, that we are looking for humanity, that we are wishing the best. You know, I say this a lot lately, but beginning to lack empathy is not going to heal a world that is lacking empathy.
That's true.
So the more that we can teach them empathy, even if they disagree, I think the less divided they can feel, because to Melissa's point, they can go back to a self that is whole, and that we're not asking them to shove aside a part of their humanity or their heart or their empathy to stay righteous on something, but that we're letting them integrate, you know, the realest part of them, which is love. And I think we just have to keep reminding them of that, and also limit their social media, man. You know, we have all kinds of tools. My kids' Instagram time gets cut off after an hour. They just don't need to be scrolling forever. There's just too much on there, and that algorithm plays on rage and divisiveness. Yeah. So let's get them off. I'm not saying altogether, but just limit their access.
Smart.
I hope that was helpful. We love all of you for listening. And if you love us back, please share this episode and this podcast with the people in your life that you think would benefit from it. And also leave us a review. That really helps the podcast get sure in front does. Of way more people. And it helps us to keep making it. So thank you for listening, Bean. As always,
love
it's
you.
Been a delight. I love you. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks with a new episode of Signal. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.